Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
All right. Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly well, I can't even say that anymore. I used to say weekly vigorous, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom, but I guess now it's quarterly. We are broadcasting live from the very well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. And encourage you to be a part of the show. If you happen to be listening live, we're starting this broadcast. It's almost 11 p.m. Central Time here. But unlikely we're going to have any live listeners tonight. But I should get the warning out here. Well, first, the show, the number, if you do want to call in, is 563-999-3787. 563-999-3787. And then start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. But so it's been a bit. Definitely some rust here. Now, part of it's my fault, part of it's not. Blog Talk changed their connection protocol for the hosts, which given that I threw up this podcast link, scheduled the show at about 10:40 to start at 10:45. Didn't have much time to review that, so I hopefully I'm connected here, and I'm going to make one quick check here, and hope that the audio that my mic is coming through, which I am not certain of, and the only way I do that is by, let me see if I can, I'm listening to my show live on another computer, hoping that, yeah. I can't even say that that's working. So we're going to cross our fingers and hope that we've got audio going here. And if we don't, I guess I'll just delete this link and try again tomorrow. But so we'll give it a run and see what happens. But it's been a while. Last show I had, I think, was April 23rd, perhaps. I think that was my last show. Yeah, April 23rd, I believe, was my last show. And so what's been going on since then? I don't want to spend the whole show on it, but first I tore my shoulder apart, my shoulder and my bicep apart at the gym in May. I don't remember exactly what day it was in May, but sometime in May. And so I had to deal with that. Then I had to deal with surgery. I had surgery on July 7th. So yeah, I've been out of commission. I've been, I mean, stressed out. I mean, you name it. Being an extremely active person, I mean, my life revolves around physical activity. I mean, I have a desk job. I mean, I run a company. I'm sitting behind a computer to run my company, but I go to the gym every day. I'm washing, waxing vehicles every week. I'm washing and waxing my boat every week. And I play golf twice a week. I just, activity is what I do. And then, oops, let me silence that phone. And so to be limited with right now having basically only the use of one hand is extremely frustrating. And just there was no way to get everything fit in. And honestly, for two reasons. One, listenership was always lower during the summer anyway, because, I mean, let's face it, we're in Wisconsin. We get 3 months of nice weather here. Although I love the weather here year round. Like, I mean, I honestly love Wisconsin weather. Like, I love everything about Wisconsin weather. I like winter. Let me take that back. I love 90% of Wisconsin weather. I love the winter weather. I love summer. Absolutely love the fall, my favorite season. There's two things I don't like. And that's the below zero crap. Like that just, there's no, I mean, I can do it for a day or a night or whatever, but I mean, when you get like daytime highs that don't get above zero, that's too much. I mean, that's just, that's no fun. And then, the other thing that I don't like is the, fall or spring washout days. Seems like we really don't have washout days during the summer where it just rains start to finish. But the spring and the fall, we get a couple days where it's like 40, 50, or even 60, but it just literally rains all day. And that's no fun. I guess if it doesn't happen on the weekend, that's good. But I don't let the weather stop me from really doing anything I want to do. Or I try not to. I live here in Wisconsin. You have to learn to never let the weather win. And so, I mean, in the winter when we hike, it doesn't matter, warm, cold, snow. I mean, we'll hike in snow. But that spring all day rain, because if it's just a passing shower, then I mean, we can usually go to the northern kettle moraine. If it's raining in one place, we hike all over the state, so we kind of look at where the rain's going to set up and go where it's not going to rain, or plot around it. If it's going to rain at 2 or 3, then get out a little bit later. If it's going to rain at 5 or 4, then you get out a little bit earlier. So just make it work. But so I love Wisconsin weather, with the exception of the below zero and the all day rain. So here in Wisconsin, I say 3 months of nice weather. I think that's how most people treat it. So I think that's obviously the reason why listenership is lower during the summer. People are out doing stuff. And the reason why I don't do as many shows, I mean, usually I'm golfing on Sunday afternoons until the sun goes down. Then I get home and I'm rushing to eat and all kinds of other stuff. But yeah, this year it was, then I thought when I hurt my shoulder, I thought, well, hey, we'll have plenty of time to do shows. But then I realized working with one arm, everything takes 3 times as long. Working with your left arm, your non-dominant arm, everything takes 3 times as long. I mean, taking a shower, and I used to be able to take a shower and get dressed in 10 minutes. Now that's a half hour. I hurt my shoulder at the gym. I hurt my shoulder sleeping. Slept on it funny. And that was the key factor here. Because if I, over the years, I've pulled a muscle at the gym, and then you realize, hey, I pulled this muscle and I got to avoid that particular movement because I don't want to injure it further. When you're young, first off, when you're young, you heal fast. But when you're young in bodybuilding, sometimes you push through stuff you shouldn't. You should push through soreness, but you don't really push through pain. And that's what happened here is I my shoulder was super sore, but I knew that I only hurt it sleeping on it funny. I woke up, I had slept on it funny. We were tramping with the truck. I didn't sleep. That's where we were sleeping, in the back of the truck. I got a little flated topper. Flated's the brand, flated topper. And just the way I slept, I was laying on my arm and woke up. It was sore. The next day I couldn't lift it. But it didn't hurt at the gym. So then I go to the gym and it loosens up and I'm like, okay, it's fine. And then like a week later, then it didn't loosen up. But the whole time I'm thinking to myself, I didn't hurt it at the gym. I just hurt it sleeping on it. So it wasn't a lifting related movement. So this pain is just ancillary pain, tangential pain. Like it's pain, but it's not the muscle or the tendon that I'm working out with. So I thought it was pain that I could just ignore and push through. Well, 5 weeks working through the pain, and it was serious pain. Then I'm at the gym. I went, did a couple warm-up sets, 50-pound dumbbells, 65-pound dumbbells. This is just laying flat on a bench with dumbbell presses. And I go to my heavier set with 100-pound dumbbells and went back, laid down, go to push, just felt a pop. And it wasn't a pop. It felt like, I don't know how to describe it. It felt like ripping a banana peel open. Like when you got a banana peel and you take that first rip, like it was just kind of like, that was what it felt like. Like two of those, not a pop, but like a crunch, crunch, rip, rip. As if like that first crack open of a banana peel. And I knew right away, my arm went numb. I knew right away it bruised right on the outside of my arm. And I knew right away I tore something. It was not a good end to spring, start to summer. Then I was in prehab, and that worked out okay. I was actually getting to a point where I could do everything I wanted to do, short of working out heavy with my right arm. I don't want to spend the whole show talking about it, but then surgery was a way out. That was scheduled for July 7th. So I basically had the month of June to anticipate the impending doom of my summer being over. So we did have some fun. We tried to make the most out of it. I told my fiance, we're going to try to squeeze a summer's worth of fun into half a summer, because that's all I got before I get my arm chopped. And, so we made it to Michigan with the boat for a day, went to Muskegon for overnight with the boat, played a lot of golf. We tried our best to get it all in, had the surgery and like all shoulder surgeries. It sucked and it hurt. And I was only in serious pain for like a day. And then after that, it was pain, but just pain that was easy to deal with. I took pain pills for like, they put a nerve block in right after you have surgery. They put a nerve, well, when you have surgery, shoulder surgery, they do a nerve block where they, I guess they go and they inject something right into the nerve that goes down to your arm. So you don't feel anything on that right arm side. It feels like your whole arm fell asleep. Your fingers feel numb. You can't feel anything. And so that nerve block usually lasts, they say, I don't know if it's like 10 to 16 hours or something. And mine did pretty good. I had mine, got mine probably at 7:30 in the morning, and it didn't wear off until like midnight. But oh my God, once it wore off, like, poof, that was some serious pain. I wasn't prepared for that. I did start, they told me not to be a hero and take the pain pills before get some pain meds on board before the block wore off. And so I took one, like took one Percocet, and that didn't even touch it. Didn't even touch the pain. So then I popped another one going to bed on Friday night. And that was just enough to let me fall asleep. And, yeah, it was, but here's the thing then with the sore shoulder, like I was getting terrible sleep, like after I heard it, like in May. So I'm used to being a really good sleeper, 7+ hours a night, and then you're not getting good sleep. And then everything just spirals when you're not getting good sleep. So yeah, surgery on, July 7th. And so now I'll be a month out, 4 weeks out, this coming Friday. So wearing the stupid sling, which is like wearing a guillotine around your neck, and it just hasn't been fun. Life's kind of sucked. People that tell you, maybe it's true for some people, you know, you hear about people who have cancer or something, and then they, you know, maybe for some people they grind through it with a smile. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I had my moments where I could pretend it wasn't happening, pretend I wasn't. You know, I see there was a girl that was on America's Got Talent. I think her name was like Nightbird. I forget her real name, but she auditions for the show. She's got cancer and sings her song and tells her story and everybody's sad about it. And it was sad. I mean, she ends up passing away. But when she's doing her audition, she says stuff like, in fact, I actually wrote down the quote because I thought it was prescient. She said, you know, to the judges on America's Got Talent, she said, you can't wait until life isn't hard anymore before you decide to be happy. And I'm like, you know, that's a good point. Life's always hard. At some point, you just got to decide to be happy. With that said, I think more often than not, like sometimes life sucks and you just got to grind it through. And this glamorous, like people that are in, whether it's chemotherapy or whatever, and that they make it sound like they, it was something that they, I don't want to say rose to the occasion of, because I mean, if you go through it, you're rising to the occasion, but you don't have a choice. But like for me, I wouldn't say that I, and my fiance thought I was doing phenomenal. She's like, oh, I can't believe, I mean, no, we were the day after, well, I had surgery on Friday morning, July 7th, and then Saturday, July 8th, we went for a hike. And she's like, oh, you're doing phenomenal for being, you know, one day post-op and probably doing more than maybe people thought I should be doing. But for me, it's just grinding it out. Like life sucks and you're just grinding it out. Like life's just going to suck for a while. It's not like I'm going to write a book and tell people how to be, how to deal with bad things that happen to you. And again, shoulder surgery, is it the worst thing? No, it's not cancer. It's not, you know, something that takes a year. Well, actually, the funny thing is the recovery for this surgery is 6 to 12 months. So it will be like a year before I'm fully recovered. But a majority of that, I mean, I'm going to be able to do a lot of what I want to do. I think it's like 3 or 4 months where I can't golf. I can't do, I bought a new motorcycle in June. I can't ride that. I can't ride my bike. I can't do anything. So people that you hear or see on TV and like, oh, they dealt with it. They, you know, they never lost the smile. Maybe there's people like that. I'm not one of them. It's just, like I said, life sucks and you just grind it out. And that's why I said to some kid at the gym, I'm at the gym and people, a lady, so I'm at the gym with my one arm in a sling like 3 days after surgery. And some lady's like, oh, you're an inspiration. I was like, trust me. I'm not an inspiration. I don't feel like an inspiration. And you should have seen me complain around the house about a frustration with this situation. And she's like, well, you're here and that's an inspiration. I was like, okay, fair enough. But yeah, it's just life sucks and you just got to grind it out sometimes. And I wouldn't say I was a particularly great grinded, you know, keep, you know, never let the smile off your face. I mean, fuck that. It was shitty and it sucked. And I was a miserable bitch many of the days. And like I said, just grind it out and every day gets a little bit better. So anyway, enough about that. Talk too much on that. Didn't mean to spend so much time on it, but that's what I've been doing. That's why I haven't had the show combined with the fact that it's summer and, you know, I don't do shows quite as frequently in the summer, but I like to try to at least be like, you know, bi-weekly. And then once the hurting my shoulder and then working through all that stuff, it was just too much. So sorry for being away. For whoever catches this podcast, thanks for keeping up with me and tuning back in. I did have an awesome experience. I went up to, so the first week after my surgery, I went for a walk down in Bender Park with my fiance, hike with the dog. Second Saturday, so I, a week after surgery, that Saturday was Port Washington Fish Day. So my daughter, Julia, and myself and my fiance, Kim, we went up to, it's my fiance's daughter, I call her my daughter. We went up to Port Washington for Fish Day, which was kind of boring. I remember going to Fish Day, gosh, honestly, it's probably been 20 years ago. It was probably like 2001-ish, maybe 2002. I think it was last time I went to Fish Day. And I don't know, Fish Day is just like way overrated. But this is Wisconsin, like Wisconsin festivals. There's a beer tent, a band, and beer. And Fish Day has where they're serving fish and fries. But so it's up in Port Washington. Port Washington is a beautiful town. You know, we take the boat up there once a year, sometimes twice a year. It's fun to, it's just a beautiful town. You can walk out on the breakwall and it's just quaint little town. So we went up there and I ran into, this has only happened, I think one other time. Is I ran into a dude, Tom from Keewaskum. I'm at Fish Day. We go. I grab a beer. A fiance and daughter, they order some fish and fries or fish and chips. I think they call them fish and fries, but I don't think, maybe fish and chips. Fish and chips seems like British. I don't. And then we're walking across past the band shell where the Love Monkeys were just getting warmed up to start to play. And then we walk over by the lake and I see some dude with a Wisconsin Carry t-shirt on. I'm like, holy shit. Like when I see Wisconsin Carry shirts out in the wild, so to speak, it's like at the annual meeting. I mean, I know I'm going to see people with Wisconsin Carry t-shirts there. Or like a friend of mine, like my friend Phil from who lives in Alabama now, he's come out of my boat and he was wearing a Wisconsin Carry t-shirt, but you know, people that I might expect, when we used to do Wisconsin Carry events, again, whatever they might be, I would expect to see Wisconsin Carry classes, our volunteers, but just seeing a t-shirt out in the wild, I think the first time I ever saw it was I was walking into the gym, Experience Fitness down in Hales Corners, and some kid was wearing one. And I was like, hey, love the shirt. Where'd you get it? Oh, my dad gave it to me. So that was the first time I saw one out in the wild. And then the second time was up at Port Washington Fish Day. Whatever day that was. So July 15th, I think July 15th was Fish Day. So Tom, I went up and introduced myself, said, hey, got to say hi to a guy with a Wisconsin Carry t-shirt on. He didn't recognize me by face, but I was like, oh, I'm Nick from Wisconsin Carry and thanks for representing. And so Tom, he said he catches a podcast from time to time. Tom, if you catch this podcast, thanks for representing. And it was awesome to meet you and stay free, my friend. So, that was a fun, a cool experience. I've had some topics I wanted to do. Wanted to do a show for a couple weeks here, but again, just so bogged down. And even just getting my regular work done for running my company has been super hard. Then this past week I got busy and I bought some. I've been looking for years. When we started hiking with the dog out in the Kettle Moraine, so we got a dog. He's 7. So, yeah, 7. I mean, we didn't get him the day he was born. So, yeah, I guess it was 7 years ago. So 2015, that sound right? 2016? Anyway, And so then we started taking him hiking out in the Kettle Moraine. Then I grew up out in Delavan, which is not far from the southern Kettle Moraine. More we start hiking out in the Kettle Moraine, and then my fiance and I, we start hiking all around the state, all around the Midwest. I love being out in the country, and started thinking how cool it would be. Like, I've hated living in a subdivision for years. I'm in a subdivision. I got an HOA. My HOA is cool. There's not too many rules, but a lot of subdivisions, you know, you can't, your grass gets too long, and there's some, you can't park trailers, you can't park RVs in your driveway. You can't, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. And I just hate that. Like, you know, you buy your property and it's yours. I mean, there's some city ordinances and municipal regulations that prevent most things. Like, even municipal regulation says your grass has to be kept, you know, mowed and whatever, unless it's no mow May, which is total suburban virtue signaling. But I've wanted property that was like your own property, that didn't have like I can't build like my property where I'm at now. I can't just go start throwing up a pole barn behind it or something. The city zoning wouldn't allow that. The HOA wouldn't allow it. There's enough. So besides that, I want to be out in the country. I've been looking at land. I've been interested. I've been dreaming about owning land in the country for years. And my rules were, I wanted three things. I wanted woods. I wanted a split grade lot so I could be up on a hill. And then I wanted water. And those are my rough requirements. I've refined those over the years. I mean, sometimes we were hiking up in the Devil's Lake area and like the Baraboo Hills, like just, there's some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful countryside up there where you can buy some land, less expensive. But so many valleys and bluffs and beautiful settings and forest, and you're away from it. But like, then you're like 2 hours away from Milwaukee. I'm a long way from Lake Michigan, where my boat is kept. And so I'm sitting here over the years. Sometimes I start looking hard for land for a couple of weeks, and then for a couple of weeks I don't look. Anyway, found some land this past week, Northern Kettle Moraine, put an offer in, offer accepted, got into a little bit of a bidding war, but a little bit tense. But here's the thing. For me, something about being out in the country feels like freedom, and I love freedom, and something about living in a subdivision just doesn't feel like freedom. And I'm not a suburban hater. I'm not a, you know, but for me, I just, that's what freedom feels like. And so I bought, it's just under 15 acres. It's about a mile east of the Kettle Moraine State Forest, the northern unit. It's in a town called Farmington, just east of Keewaskum. And so it's like 30 minutes to get to Port Washington, where there's a nice marina. It's like, I think it's like 40 minutes to get to Sheboygan, where there's another nice marina. And then, and it's only 51 minutes to get to Milwaukee. So it's up there. I mean, it feels like country, like you're in the middle of nowhere. It was just a perfect lot. Almost perfect. There's a couple things that were more trees. It could use more trees. It's got some trees, but I'd say it's maybe 15% wooded, and I would have liked like 50% wooded. But I mean, this hill, man, you can see forever. I mean, and that's where the place where I would build would be, on the top of the hill. You can, it doesn't have water. There's a creek that's somewhat nearby, but not on my property. But there's a low part where I think I'm going to dig a big, huge pond. But the nice thing now is that now I know where I'm going to live for the rest of my life, because when we're going to build up there to start with, I mean, not right away, but to start with, I'll probably put like one of those luxury pole barns with some living quarters, and then eventually build like those, they call them barn dominiums. If you go to YouTube and type barn dominium, luxury barn dominium, you'll see them. That's what I want to do, like a big steel building. But these things, I say steel building, like they look, and they're beautiful inside, gourmet kitchens, and they're sprawling, but they're, you know, open concept. And I just, that's my idea of living. And I'm 48 years old, but now this is where, like, and this is years and years in the future, but my fiance's kids, I call my kids that, I mean, their grandkids, our grandkids, their kids are going to be coming up there for holidays and what, and you know, I'm going to have, toys, UTVs and snowmobiles and all that good stuff. And then when you're up there, like, you don't need, like, down here in New Berlin, you got snowmobiles, you keep in the garage, and you got to drive to a trail. Well, up there, the roads are UTV roads. The snowmobile, you could get to a snowmobile trail by just scooting down the side of the road on the shoulder a mile, and you're to the Kettle Moraine, where you're hooked up to all the snowmobile trails. And I just, it's like I said, it's almost perfect. So close to perfect that I don't think I'd find perfect. I mean, if it had a big lake, that would be perfect. It doesn't. But again, I'm going to dig a pond. But again, there's something about living out in the country that just feels like freedom. So that's been on the list. And that's something else that happened. But been busy. And then speaking of busy, the topics that I've wanted to do, I'm going to do this one first because Jason Aldean. I've always liked Jason Aldean. One of the first songs that really kicked for me was Dirt Road Anthem. Lyrics are something like, you know, cruising down a dirt road, laid back. Was it swerving like I'm George Jones? Smoke rolling out the window, ice cold beer sitting in the console. I mean, I grew up out in the country in Delavan, and like that was weekends. Like there's not a lot to do out in Delavan. I mean, Lake Neva's not too far from Delavan, but during the winter, like, yeah, we would road trip. I mean, that's what we did for fun. That's kind of what, I mean, I don't know if they still do, but find an old farm road, friend's parents' farm, and drive to the back of it and park a bunch of cars by their creek. And that's what we did. And so he's got this new song called, I don't need to tell you guys, you've heard it. It's the Try That in a Small Town. And here's the thing. I'm not going to just talk about the same things everybody else has talked about, but I have a different view on it. And my view is that the reason that that song is so offensive to the media, to Democrat politicians, is what Try That in a Small Town is really about, is it's about the fact that we still have the right to self-defense in this country. You know, he says, put a gun in a liquor store clerk's face. And you know, I think another one is spit in a cop's face. But the imagery and the stuff, it's talking about the riots when people were left hung out to dry. The police were ordered not to protect the neighborhoods. In Kenosha, for example, they were ordered to protect the courthouse. And so that results in people having to protect themselves. And see, self-defense is what liberals find so offensive. And the media and the elected Democrat elite, because they don't believe you should have the right to defend yourself. They believe that your right to self, that your ability to be defended should sit in the hands of the government. They believe the government is the one who should decide who gets defended and who doesn't. So there's a riot and the particular political issues lined up are such that they think that the rioters should get to have their way. And the people that live where there's riots are collateral damage. And sorry, you're just going to have to deal with it. And that's what you got insurance for. And, you know, the liberals don't want people defending themselves, deciding for themselves when they should defend themselves. And again, there's laws in place to dictate what's legal self-defense and what's not. Those are very clear for the most part. And someone like Kyle Rittenhouse, I mean, how dare he? How dare Kyle Rittenhouse? You know what happened? These riots after Kyle Rittenhouse, like, they ended. And it wasn't just because more National Guard got called in. But when all these lefty Antifa, and some of them were just hooligans, thugs, anarchists, when they realized that, yeah, what's the acronym? FAFO, fuck around, find out. When they realized that, hey, I don't just get to go looting and burning shit and acting on all my pent up anger at the world because I'm a loser with no future. Oh, I mess with, you know, I cross a line, because look, you can get away with a lot of property damage. You can't use deadly force to protect property. But all of a sudden, you know, you start threatening a person, and yeah, that person can defend themselves legally. That is so offensive to the Democrats. That is so offensive to the elected politicians, because that's what they don't believe in. They don't trust people to make these decisions of when they can protect themselves from rioters. No, I mean, rioting is the voice of the unheard. How dare you squelch the voice? And after Kyle Rittenhouse did what he did, had to defend himself. Yeah, there was a whole bunch of people that were just like, that was the end of it. People realized that it's not just fun and games and looting and rioting. It's you cross a line and it's over for you. And legally for the person who had to defend themselves. So that's what I think. That song is about self-defense, and the left has failed to stop the spread of right to carry legislation that has swept the country. So what the left has left to do is to outlaw self-defense. And believe me, that is exactly what they're trying to do. They do not believe in self-defense as a philosophy. Conservatives do. A lot of Democrat voters might believe in self-defense. You know, you've got people living in the inner city. They believe in self-defense. They got their concealed carry license. But the elected Democrats, they do not believe in self-defense. Look, these are people that they have security, and they don't even have to go places where they're not safe, because they've got an entourage, and everywhere they go, there's usually television cameras and rope lines and all kinds of other things. So they don't care about how dangerous it gets out there. I mean, this is the Hunger Games. They live in the Capitol, and you're out fending for yourself in the precincts. They don't care. They don't care about the murder rate in Milwaukee, except for when it might affect them politically, but it doesn't, because everything that they would propose is more government. So if the murder rate goes up, well, we need more government. Then we need more government. We need more money. We need more. I mean, just. Because when Democrats propose themselves as the solution to everything, yeah, they don't want you to be able to defend yourself. That means you don't need the government. They cannot have people who don't need the government. And that's why they find that song so offensive, because that song acknowledges that, look, in a lot of places in this country, that bullshit won't happen around here. The looting, the thuggery, just and it, you know, I even saw this. I forget what state it was. I don't remember if it was like Washington State or Seattle or California, but they were proposing to make it illegal to try to stop a shoplifter. I mean, can you think of a worse, like, the government just cannot stop causing problems. What do you think is going to happen if you make it illegal? Because right now you'll see the videos on YouTube. You see them on surveillance. They end up on the news, where some bystander stops them. A lot of it's on social media, where some bystander, there's someone shoplifting and the employees are told not to intervene, but then a bystander intervenes. And there's bystanders that intervene. And then, I mean, this happened here in West Dallas. There was a guy shoplifting in a convenience store. Bystanders intervened. I guess they, you know, took him down and pinned him to the ground. I don't think it was a chokehold or anything, but I think he had sickle cell anemia. He died. Now, what's the left going to do? They want to pass a law. I forget what area of the country it was. It wasn't Wisconsin, but they want to pass a law to make it illegal to intervene, illegal for a citizen to stop a shoplifter. I mean, this is insanity. This is so enabling. Now you're going to tell a criminal, hey, if you're shoplifting, it's illegal for someone to stop you. Like, you're protecting the lawbreakers. You're turning the law by, and that's what I said about Milwaukee for a long time, is Milwaukee's where they turn law-abiding citizens into criminals, and they treat law-abiding citizens like criminals and treat criminals like victims, and that the citizens are collateral damage in their failed social justice soft-on-crime policies because they use the streets as jail. But this is just insanity. Oh, because we see on the news where a bystander tried to intervene with a shoplifter, we're going to make it illegal to intervene with a shoplifter. Are you kidding me? Could you put a bigger welcome mat to criminals? Hey, if you're going to shoplift, do it in San Francisco, do it in Seattle, because it's illegal for people to try to stop you. It just blows my mind. And the next thing is going to be, again, they want to outlaw self-defense. Make no mistake about it. They want to make it illegal for you to protect yourself. It's 100% their goal. 100% people, no. That's why that Jason Aldean song was so offensive. It's not because it was racist. It's because the thuggery that goes on out there, they have more sympathy for, and I think I've talked about this before on the show, but I've often said to myself, why is like race the most important political issue? Why? Because you would think that, like, you even go to, they talk to people in the inner city and they say, hey, what do you want? These people that are stealing cars in Milwaukee, you know, the Kia boys, what should you do? You just throw them in jail, throw them in jail forever, lock up the key. Excuse me. And it's like, well, even some people in the community want to go tough on crime, but why won't the elite Democrat politicians, why won't the elected Democrat politicians, you would think they want to be hard on crime because the inner city is the one that suffers from crime. And then here's my conclusion. The reason that black issues, whether it's race or whatever, the reason that those drive all Democrat politicians, whether it's Joe Biden or whoever, they have to kowtow to the black vote because, first off, I believe the black vote in a lot of these urban areas is very much manipulated. I don't believe if you had a true audit, you'd find out what a huge percentage of that vote comes from people voting, not expired registrations, because you can't vote in expired registration, but registrations that aren't actually valid but are still on the books. And that's enough to tip, you know, whatever percentage, if it's 10, 15, 20% of the vote is this fraudulent vote or this manufactured vote, there are people who are deciding who's going to get that vote. This is what I believe. And Democrats, whether it's Joe Biden or you name it, they cannot win without the black vote. They cannot win without the black vote. These large metropolitan areas, they have to have the black vote to win. So for that reason, even things that you would think, hey, why doesn't Joe Biden want to be tough on crime because the inner cities are suffering the most? Because the elitists who control the black vote, they don't want you to be tough on crime because that's, I mean, someone they know. There's so much coddling of criminals. Oh, we don't want to ruin their lives. These are young people. We don't want to send them to jail and get them on the revolve, not the revolving door of justice, but the repeat reoffend vicious cycle. And we don't want to ruin this young person's life. Well, and here's the thing. If you can't just incarcerate all the, you know, the answer is you don't have to incarcerate them all. You start to incarcerate them, then there's a deterrent for other people not to commit those crimes. So you're not going to ruin the life of every young inner city youth who commits a crime. But unfortunately, you might have to ruin the life of some of them. And I would argue if you start having severe punishment for the minor crimes, not cruel and unusual punishment. I mean, we're not going to put someone in jail for shoplifting. Although maybe they do 10 days in jail or something, but you're not going to put them in prison for a year for shoplifting. But if you have serious consequences for every offense, you start to teach repercussions. But when you don't have serious consequences, or when you have no consequences for minor offenses and very little consequences for somewhat serious offenses, you just condition inner city youth that they can do bad things and get away with it. Nothing bad is going to happen. You can shoplift, and if you get caught, you're going to get a slap on the wrist, no jail time, and then you have a record, but you don't care. You don't care about your record. Then you steal a car, and again, you get a slap on the wrist, and you're told this, and you get a court date, and then you have people paying attention to you, but you don't get it. Maybe you spent the night in jail. What does that tell you? I mean, yeah, you don't want to get caught, but if you do get caught, nothing really bad happens. So it's worth the risk. Steal some more cars. And that's why some of these people, like, I really think when you see them on the news and stuff, they're just, they end up shooting someone because then they finally get it because other crimes, they had no consequences. And I think they're even shocked that they're like, they're even shocked when they get sentenced to prison for shooting someone. Cause they're like, wait, I'm not just going to get a court date and probation and a suspended sentence. And, I'm actually going legit. Like I see one on TV and he turns around and looks at his mom, like he killed someone. And he turns around and looks at his mom in the court. Like he's shocked that he got sent to jail for, I don't even remember what the sentence was. I don't know if it was the rest of his life or something, but the kid looked shocked. Like he couldn't believe it. Like, mom, can you believe it? Like, they can't believe there's repercussions because there's never been repercussions for them. So again, I think that the reason that every politician, even guys like Joe Biden, they have to kowtow to the black vote because they cannot win without it. And that's why no matter the issue, and especially on self-defense, more often than not, because there's so much crime that occurs, whether it's, when it's these riots or who knows what. And it's funny because like Kyle Rittenhouse, like he didn't even, those weren't the people that he defended himself from weren't black. But the issue was about protest for George Floyd stuff. Or although in that case, it was, what was that? The guy down in Kenosha, Jacob Blake, another black guy who was a real winner. So because of the Democrat elite in these urban areas, that's why the Democrat politicians have to kowtow to them because they couldn't win elections without them. And so this whole Jason Aldean song controversy, again, it's an effort to make self-defense illegal. First off, to make it socially unacceptable. And second off, after they win that culture war, to make it legally prohibited. And again, Democrats have lost right to carry laws have swept the country. That ship has sailed. It's not going back. So they can't win there. But where they can win is, okay, we can't keep you from carrying a gun. We're going to try to keep you from carrying it all kinds of places. But most certainly, if you end up using your gun, we're going to make your life hell, especially if you use it against a person of color. We're going to make your life hell. We're going to make your life such hell that you're going to wish you didn't use your gun. We're going to make your life such hell that if we can't get you in jail, we're going to make the persecution the punishment. And the next time you're going to say, you know what, it's just not worth carrying a gun because I carry a gun for self-defense. And then if I actually use it in self-defense, I'm going to get sued or I'm going to get, forget sued, I'm going to get charged. And it's just going to not be worth it for people. So talking about this whole stand on the music thing, Jason Aldean, his song, why that's a controversy. Have you guys heard Jelly Roll? He's a singer. I guess he used to sing some more. I don't know if you'd call it hip hop, but some more like kind of like maybe a little bit Eminem-ish type, like white rapper kind of. It's kind of hard to characterize his exact musical style, but this guy Jelly Roll, he sings his songs are on the country charts. One of them's a Son of a Sinner, great song, great tune, great lyrics. But this is a guy who grew up near Nashville, got in tons of trouble as a kid. I think at 16 he said he was charged as an adult, was in prison, and now I guess he said what turned his life around was while he was in prison for something, he found out that he had a daughter. And then he decided that right there and then that he was going to get himself out. When he got out of jail, he was going to clean himself up. He was going to do right and be a good father. And that was his turning point moment. And so what he ended up doing was, I think he said he started selling mixtapes. Then he started singing, and he's a good musician. I guess he was always into music and a lot of different musical influences, but now he's got And he's talented. I mean, his songs, I mean, people definitely relate to them. It's like he calls it real music for real people, or music for people that I forget the exact characterization, his exact words, but music for people who life is forgotten about or something like that. Music for the forgotten, the overlooked. And so he makes a comment. So I was watching some of his videos, watched some of his interviews, because it's an interesting story. Now he's like, he's played the Grand Old Opry. And while he's playing the Grand Old Opry, he says something like, you know, I forget how many years earlier, but if he said 10 years earlier or 18 years, I was down the street at such and such a prison doing time. And now here I am on the stage of the Grand Old Opry. I mean, this is a dream come true. And he's like, you know, I used to live, I used to be a 12-minute drive from the Opry, but it took me 36 years. I think he's like 36 years old. It took me 36 years to get here. And this is when he's performing for the first time on the Grand Old Opry stage. So, I mean, it's a great, I don't know if it's even rags to riches, but it's a great prison to riches story. I mean, now the guy is, you know, super, you know, he's got hit songs and financially he's well off and he's this guy's, I mean, if you haven't seen Jelly Roll, I mean, Google him. He's got face tattoos. He's a big fat roly poly guy. His story, I think, would resonate with most people, maybe not some really snooty, snobby types, but with most normal people, his story would resonate. And then the cool part about it is he is so normal. And he didn't come from, like, I don't know, sometimes, like, I mean, there's a lot of singers who came from, like, nothing, but they had to, which is his story as well. But then they immediately start to become, in the case of female singers, divas. In the case of male singers, like, the fame and everything goes to their head really, really, really quick. Like, they adopt that elitist celebrity attitude, lifestyle really, really quick. And Jelly Roll, he didn't. I mean, he's still big, fat face tattoo. I mean, he looks like a slob, and I don't mean that in like a super insulting way, but kind of. I'm not trying to insult the guy, but he just does. He looks like a slob. He doesn't dress all flashy. I mean, you know, rappers and stuff. Well, they fake like their, you know, gold chains and all that stuff, but they, you know, and all the fresh clothes and Jelly Roll, like, still stand up there on stage in a plaid, baggy pants because he's super, super fat. He has to have baggy pants. I mean, just he hasn't changed. His look, it's just, he looks like he just got out of prison but he's up there and he's a great singer and people relate to it. But he made a comment in an interview. He said, you know, he's been convicted of a felony, and he talked about not being able to possess guns, for the rest of his life. And, you know, here he said he is 20 years later from his conviction. He's got no right to keep and bear arms, no right to protect his family. And see, this is, I think, a winning issue for conservatives, for pro-gun types, is that could appeal to other people. And maybe there's some Republicans that wouldn't touch it. But when you've got people, like, you can stand up for freedom. And I think freedom always wins. Freedom is always a winning issue. And if you stand up for people and say, and even in, like, now criminal justice reform has drawn the ire from conservatives. Like, for example, Kim Kardashian going to the White House and President Trump taking an affinity for potentially for criminal justice reform. I do think there's still some criminal justice reform that has some viable pieces. And one of those viable pieces, like, I'm not in favor of not sending people to jail for committing crimes. I'm not in favor of saying, oh, there's too many black people in jail and maybe black people commit more crimes. Number of reasons that maybe that is, but commit crimes, go to jail. I mean, but people that have turned their life around, there should be an incentive for people to keep themselves clean. I've said this for years, and I think this is an issue that conservatives could take up, that conservatives should support, is, look, you, and I don't, you know, rough framework, let's say when you, if you're convicted of a felony, you lose your right to keep and bear arms, but let's say maybe it's 10 years without a conviction for any crime or no. What was what I used to say? Maybe it was 10 years without an arrest. and 20 years without a conviction, because you can get arrested for stuff. And that means you're still out there. Maybe you don't get convicted. Maybe you do. But if you go 20 years without an arrest, 10 years without an arrest, that's a pretty good indication you're keeping your tail clean. And then maybe it's 10 years without an arrest, 20 years without a conviction, then you get your right to carry restored, your right to keep and bear arms restored. I mean, we give people something to endeavor to, something, a reason to keep their nose clean, a benefit to staying on the straight and narrow. And it's just the right thing to do. You shouldn't lose your right to self-defense because you committed a crime when you were 16 or 18. Or if you're 50 and you commit a crime when you're 20, you shouldn't not have the right to self-defense when you're 50 when you committed a crime when you were 20. So I think there should be a codified. I mean, now there's, you know, you can get a pardon. Some states it's easier than others. But I think that that should be an issue that conservatives could take up, and it would have wide appeal to both sides of the aisle, so to speak. And you could steal, I mean, look, Democrats don't care about poor people. Democrats don't care about, I mean, if Democrats cared about poor people, they wouldn't have tried to ban carry from buses in Wisconsin, because that's how low-income folks get around. So I saw that interview with Jelly Roll, and I think here's another example where, and not just Jelly Roll, but I mean, look, I don't care who you are, not just famous people, but a kid in the inner city of Milwaukee who's stealing cars at 18 and doing bad stuff. I mean, he gets himself out of jail, stays 10 years with no arrests or 20 years with no convictions. And I mean, there's no reason he shouldn't have his right to keep and bear arms restored. And I think that's an issue that Democrats wouldn't undertake and Republicans can. And it is the right thing to do. And it would have broad appeal to some people who might not otherwise be traditional Republican voters. Next thing I was going to talk about was here's a real quick one. What do you guys think about this Barbie movie? I haven't seen it. I'm not going to see it. But having not seen it, I can tell you there must be a whole bunch of woke bullshit in there, a whole bunch of political woke bullshit, because the media is pushing this Barbie movie so hard that there's got to be. They wouldn't be pushing it this hard if it wasn't some mega woke lefty cultural push going on in that movie. I saw something floating around on social media, like conservatives boycott Barbie, stop buying Barbie dolls and this and that. And, because it's, I forget how they characterized the movie, if it was pro-trans or something. And look, I haven't seen it. So I'm not going to like tell people to boycott Barbie stuff or whatever. I haven't seen the movie. And I don't take people's word for it. Even conservatives, if conservatives say, oh, boycott Barbie, it's pro-trans or whatever. No, show me, like, tell me what happened in the movie that makes it so pro-trans. And all that said, watching how much the media loves this movie, there must be some mega pro lefty bullshit in there, because it's just local TV news, the national TV. I mean, they're so Barbie, 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 Barbie. It's like everyone, they wouldn't saturate coverage / fawn over a movie that much if there wasn't a big lefty political message somewhere not so overtly buried within that movie. And so I haven't seen it. I'm not going to sit here and tell people to boycott. I kind of am skeptical when I see these conservative memes floating around saying to boycott it. But I think if I did watch it, it's got to be chock full of lefty political bullshit, or the media wouldn't be pushing this thing as hard as they do. Last thing I was going to talk about tonight was the Republican primary. And this is super frustrating to watch. All the people bashing Trump, I mean, on the Republican side. My dream ticket 6 months ago, a year ago, would have been Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis. I later heard something that it couldn't, if that was a ticket, then like something about the president and the vice president can't be from the same state, or you can't have that state's electoral votes or something like that. And which would make it a near impossibility because the Republicans would want Florida's, because Trump and DeSantis are both from Florida. So essentially you couldn't have, they would lose Florida's electoral votes if they were both. I saw that, it was either on the Clay and Buck show or some place where I heard that mentioned. And so, but that aside, again, 6 months ago, my dream, 9 months ago, my dream ticket would have been, yeah, it's probably more like 9 months to a year. Trump with Ron DeSantis as his running mate. And I think it would have been a great ticket. I think Ron DeSantis did a great job in Florida. Donald Trump has already proven he can do a great job with the country and the economy. And if it wasn't for the anomaly of COVID, which I do think in some respects Trump got rolled on, but I think anybody would have got rolled on that. The left had a tactic, because why would anybody get rolled on it? Because see, here's why, if people want to blame Trump for that, for not sniffing out the COVID sham quicker. And I think he did sniff it out, but for not like doing more, lest you forget, there was a whole shit ton of Republicans back in summer of 2020 who were drinking the COVID Kool-Aid. I can even name them locally. Joe Sanfilippo, he was a state rep. He's my rep here in New Berlin. I know Joe's a very conservative guy. I'm not doubting that. But man, COVID came along and he was all about the, he didn't want to stand up to Tony Evers and end the mask mandates or any of the other stuff. I mean, he did end the business lockdowns. But I mean, like there was a ton of Republicans, I don't know the percentages, but it was a huge amount who were totally on board with the COVID. I have conservative friends that were on their social media ratting out their neighbors. All my neighbors are having a party. They're having kids over at their house. They've got 12 people over at their house. What should I do? Should I call the police? I mean, again, conservative friends of mine on social media, I saw this is before I got banned from Fascist Book. So for anybody who wants to blame Trump for not fencing of the COVID scamdemic quicker, you got to remember that I'd say all the libs were on board with the COVID scamdemic, and about half of the Republicans were on board too. New Berlin's a conservative area, and you should have seen, whether it was the school board, whether it was whatever, I mean, people who call themselves conservatives, and they were all on board there. We're going to follow the CDC guidelines. I mean, just there was no pushback. I mean, I you can go back in the show and look at the old episodes. From the day that this whole thing came out, I was like, this is bullshit. We should treat this no different than the flu. On with life. I mean, you got to, you know, and I was saying that even when there was a whole bunch of it used to be all the libs and half the conservatives were drinking the COVID Kool-Aid. So that's why I don't hold Trump to blame for COVID, because he was in no win situation. If he would have been, oh, we're not doing this, we're not doing that, we're, you know, ignore it, life goes on, it's a nothing burger, half of Republicans would have turned on him too. Now maybe they would have come around years later, but at the time, I mean, he would have lost re-election for that reason, because a whole bunch of Republicans would have said, yeah, Trump didn't take COVID serious and look at all this. I mean, so yeah, he was in a no-win situation. But now DeSantis, again, he would have used to be my top pick, Trump DeSantis dream team ticket. Trump would instantly be a lame duck president. DeSantis could be in the, you know, Trump could hit the ground running, knows who he would put in his cabinet, even with all the leakers and the rhinos that got into Trump's administration and all the stuff he had to do to get beyond that. He still was able to accomplish so many great things his first term. And now I think he even knows the ways of DC even more. He knows the depths of the swamp even better. There's, I think, no one better to continue to drain or to reprime the pumps to drain the swamp is Trump. He can hit the ground running. He's got his cabinet people that he would be able to plug right in. And then DeSantis would be just heir apparent, in 2028. Well, then what happens is all these people that are anti-Trump see DeSantis as an alternative, and they start piling behind him. And then all of a sudden, DeSantis becomes like, how could I support someone that Paul Ryan supports? And Paul Ryan supports DeSantis. I don't know if he's endorsed him, because I thought I heard him say endorsed him, but Paul Ryan is a big DeSantis supporter, among others. Maybe Paul Ryan supports Nikki Haley. Maybe he supports, you know, but like, and even Nikki Haley today, I saw a news clip of her, and she's like, oh, these are various serious charges, the Trump and the classified documents. And like, all these people now, they're in the primary against Trump, and they have every reason in the world to play in with the Democrats on these talking points. And I just reject that. I mean, I think that if DeSantis is making a mistake for bashing Trump. DeSantis is making a mistake even running against Trump. And I think the problem that DeSantis has run into and continues, because his campaign just can't get over, you know, his 30% to Trump's 60% support among Republican voters, is that if DeSantis really cared about injustice, if DeSantis really cared about purging the weaponization of government agencies, he would end his campaign and support Trump, because the government agencies have clearly, from the DOJ, the courts in all these liberal states like New York, attorney generals, liberal attorney generals, they're going full stop against Trump. And that's the, we have to reject that weaponization of the government against not just a political candidate, but a conservative politician. Because if we don't stand behind Trump, who actually was, I believe, see, that's why I think they hated Trump, because Bush just slowed the progression to socialism. Government was still growing its power under Bush. Yeah, they hate him. They made fun of him. They mocked him. But they knew that Bush was just a slow roll to socialism versus Al Gore would have been a fast roll to socialism. Bush was a slow roll to socialism, and John Kerry would have been a fast roll to socialism. I think Trump was actually turning the tables. He was putting power back in the hands of the private sector. The private sector was growing, because you've got to look at this big picture. Big picture, if money's in the hands of the private sector, it's not in the hands of government. Money is power. Sorry to say it, it is. If the private sector grows, if the private sector has wealth, if the private sector has money, resources, assets, the private sector has more power. That's why the Democrats don't want, because the data is clear. You lower taxes, the government takes in more money, and the private sector takes in more money. Why would Democrats, I mean, this is, Democrats don't have to question this. It's proven over and over and over again. So then I've said this myself, there's why the Democrats, why won't they support tax policy? Because what do the Democrats always want? More money for government. Well, here's the rub. They don't, I've said this before on the show, they don't want, they understand that government gets more money with a tax cut. But the problem is the private sector benefits more from a tax cut than the government benefits from a tax cut. When there's a tax cut, there is more tax revenue generated. That benefits the government. But the private sector grows even faster. The government gets more money, more revenue, because there's more economic activity. But all that economic activity drives the private sector growth more. And that's why they want to suffocate the private sector while bolstering the government sector. And that's why they don't support these tax cuts that drive more revenue to the government, because it grows the private sector too much. And see that, so Trump was really, Trump had reversed, I think, that Trump actually, and look, Trump wasn't like, I mean, honestly, Trump was weak on guns. I think on the Second Amendment was probably one of Trump's weakest issues. But big picture, it's the growth of the private sector that drives freedom. I think that's what it comes down to, is the private sector grows more, that's freedom. If the government grows quicker than the private sector, that's tyranny. And that was Trump's cardinal sin. That was Trump's unforgivable sin, is he was actually taking power out of the hands of DC and putting it back in the private sector on all kinds of levels. And that's what they couldn't have. That's what the left couldn't have. And so for Trump to do that, if we don't stand behind him, it would say to any other politician, whether it be any other aspiring politician, whether that be Elon Musk or someone else, if the people that believe in freedom don't stand behind a politician who goes to bat for freedom, and it's easy to throw them under the bus. It's easy, and the Republicans love to do this. Like gun owners love to do it. Gun owners. They tried to throw Kyle Rittenhouse under the bus when that first happened, because the quickest, easiest thing for some pro-gun conservative folks to do is to, the minute something draws the ire of the left, to try to throw it under the bus and say, oh, no, Kyle Rittenhouse. Oh, he shouldn't have even been there. No, Kyle Rittenhouse had every moral right to be there, and he had every legal right to be there, and he acted legally. Instead of the day it happened, people saying, it looked like self-defense, but he shouldn't have been there. I mean, this is, you have to, it's so easy for some conservatives to try to throw something that the left gets outraged against under the bus. And I think that's the reason there's a lot of Republicans who think, oh, just Trump. Well, it'll be easier to win with someone other than Trump. You've got to stand up for the people who, what's it going to say to a guy like Elon? Maybe Elon Musk someday wants to run for president and wants to support freedom and freedom of speech and all these things and separation of powers and getting the government out of big tech. But if he does that, he's going to get attacked. And if the people aren't going to stand behind politicians who actually go to bat for freedom, then other politicians aren't going to go to bat for freedom. So we have to drag Trump. And again, Trump's going to do his part to win too. It's not like, but we conservatives, I believe, need to drag Trump over the finish line, because if we don't, we're throwing politicians who do the right thing in office, and we're saying that we won't stand behind them. Because again, why didn't we have to go stand behind Bush? Because Bush wasn't really making that big of a difference. He was just slowing the rush to socialism. He wasn't taking power out of the hands of the federal government. In fact, he grew it with the Department of Homeland Security and the Patriot Act and all this other stuff. So yeah, maybe he cut taxes for a couple years. Left didn't like that. But they're going to get back in office and they're going to raise taxes, and that'll be back in the Democrat win column. But yeah, I just feel so strongly that we have to stand behind Trump, because he truly took on the establishment. And if we don't, no other politician's ever going to do it. And it might not be Elon Musk, but whoever else might think, I'm going to run for president. If they know, if they run for president, they really try to restore freedom, they're going to get the Trump treatment by the media. And when they get that Trump treatment by the media, if we the people don't stand behind, there's no incentive, no reason, no, there's no victory there for a person. And I think people are. I think just, you know, you got the media Republican types and those, they're not standing behind Trump, but the people are. The people are still standing behind Trump, and they realize that we need him to win again to right this injustice and send a message to future aspiring politicians that if you stand for freedom, we will stand behind you no matter what. And that's why DeSantis, and whether it's criticizing Trump or bashing Trump, it's like and I, you know, we all got walked over by the left. And I say we all, I didn't, because I knew the COVID was crap to start with. But, you know, it's like we, the people, like conservatives, we went through something with Trump. And we all got worked over for it by the media, called deplorables, called, you know, now we're MAGA types, now we're... So we went through this, and even people who were drinking the COVID Kool-Aid, like they still went through all that bullshit of the left, the riots, the COVID. They went through all that. I feel like, you know, we kind of have a kinship with Trump. And for Ron DeSantis to come in and say, oh, well, Trump didn't do enough on COVID, but it clearly wasn't a winning message. And that's the reason DeSantis' campaign floundered and didn't get steam. And again, the other thing is that when all the establishment types like Paul Ryan line up behind Ron DeSantis, that just makes Ron DeSantis look bad. So, yeah, it's in some respects disappointing to see so many Republicans that, you know, 30% that aren't supporting Trump, that are supporting DeSantis instead, but they'll get on board with Trump. But it's, you know, even, you know, I listened to Clay and Buck, and they were saying the other day that this is a couple weeks ago that, you know, suburban white women will decide the next election. I couldn't disagree more strongly with that. And then when people say, oh, well, you know, Trump, this and that, well, that didn't win him the election last time. And again, it's like, did people forget the ballot boxes under the table in Atlanta and the movie 2000 Mules or whatever it was and all this ballot box stuffing? I mean, just like, this is insanity. Trump won. And even if he got the election stolen from him, he won the hearts and minds of people. He went from like 64 million votes in 2016 to 74, 75 million votes, 11 million more votes, 12 million more votes. He won the hearts and minds of people. And through ballot manufacturing and all kinds of other methods, the Democrats stole a win. I don't think they legally stole it. I think they illegally stole it, but maybe they did steal it fair and square. I don't think so. With their Zuckerbucks targeting the, you know, five swing states or whatever. But when you make data based upon bad decisions, and to say that suburban white women will decide this election, I just, okay, great. Well, then let's just target our whole message to suburban white women. No. There are other people out there that went to the polls for Trump, the rural, forgotten about voters, the apathetic voters, and he found a constituency in those. So you don't have to go running to suburban white women to win your elections. Oh, well, the data from 2020 says Trump lost suburban white women. Yeah, the data from 2020 should be thrown in the garbage can and burned, because the data from 2020 is bullshit. It was a stolen election. It was a jacked up election from the COVID bullshit. The data from 2020 should be thrown in the garbage can and burned. And this is a huge mistake in business. And I hate to see people, even like guys like Clay and Buck, who I generally love their show. Suburban white women will decide this next election. God, no. Pundits need to shut up and stop pushing their conjecture as fact, because it's causing all kinds of other people to make decisions based upon bad data, which in business is a huge mistake. You want to avoid at all costs making decisions on bad data. And all we have from 2020 is bad data. And we shouldn't be using it to make decisions. So anyway, hopefully this show, because I've just been talking now for an hour and a half, and if that didn't get all recorded, then I just wasted a whole bunch of time for nothing. So, oh, let's see here. I'm so rusty and out of practice, I can't even find my outro music. There we go. Now we got outro music. So if you hear this, it means my podcast feed did record. My microphone did pick up. If you don't hear this, you won't hear it. But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for catching up on the podcast again. I don't think I'll be doing a show next week, but maybe. But I'm going to try to get back in the groove here. I'm starting to, Friday will be 4 weeks from surgery, and I don't have to wear my sling anymore, and hopefully that speeds me up getting some of my daily activities and chores and whatever else done, and I can find some more time, because I can't golf for the rest of the year, so that hopefully leaves open some more time to do more shows and maybe better shows instead of this rusty out of practice show that we had today. So thank you guys for tuning in. Feel free as always to shoot me a message, nick@wisconsincarry.org. let me know you're listening, and you guys have a great week. Carry on and be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.